come with me into the tormented, haunted, half-lit night of the insane. This is my work. Let me lead you into it. Let me take you into the mind of a woman who is mad.
Hi, and welcome to Beyond the Cabin in the Woods, a good ghoul's guide to horror. I am your poltergeist, Kinsey.
I'm your poltergeist, Donna.
I'm your poltergeist, Mac.
And this week, we watch the brand spanking new Alien Romulus. So if you haven't seen it yet, one, why not? Two, just pause us, come back, because we're going to be in spoiler territory super, super fast. So let's just hit the ground running. Did you like it? Did you not like it? How was your theater experience?
Donna, you want to go first?
I'll go first.
You signposted that one yesterday.
I'll just say that mostly I liked it. There was some stuff I wasn't really excited about, but for the most part I enjoyed this film. The little skittering face huggers will live in my nightmares forever. But for the most part, overall I enjoyed this film. But I do have to talk about my theater experience. To my left, there was an older woman that you would not expect to see Aliens Romulus alone, who was constantly on her phone. And I did not say anything to her, which is unlike me, because I am known to let people on phones know they need to put their phones away. And the reason I did not say anything to her, a little background, I think I've mentioned this before, but I'll just remind you in case you don't know. I apparently am extraordinarily sensitive to having lights flashed in my eyes. I thought everyone didn't like having lights flashed in your eyes, but apparently I'm a weirdo. So, like, my dad will shine flashlights in my eyes. I've had phone flashlights go off in my eyes. It will give me a migraine. I mean, it is a split-second way to ruin my whole day, okay? It is bad for me. This is relevant. So the movie starts
these movies are known to flash lights in your eyes. Yeah, first of all,
that's not it. I mean, those are not LED lasers going straight through your pupil into your retina. Those are just bright lights. I'm talking about those searing, boring bright lights that just target the migraine center in the back of your brain. We're talking about something different here. Not just a bright light. We're talking about
the strobing effect that's often in this series specifically. Yeah. Keep going.
So the house lights go down and have been down long enough for my pupil to be, okay, cool. It's dark. I can get nice and wide and take in all the light that's available in this theater when someone comes in late. And they're using their cell phone flashlight as a flashlight. Now, I would have been grumpy about this. Period. But they weren't holding it down at like waist or thigh height so they could see the floor. They were holding it above their fucking head. So I'm looking over going, God, that thinking in my head, God, that's rude, when they somehow rotated it so it perfectly impacted my pupil and the back of my retina, and completely involuntarily, with no forethought and no plan, I, at the top of my lungs, went, hey, in the middle of this theater. I have to emphasize, this was not a planned out exclamation. It just happened that light hit the back of my retina and I very aggressively called out, hey, and the light went out. The cell phone light went out. There was a moment of silence and a few laughs. And then I hear this man's voice go, do you want me to fall? Now, I didn't say anything because, one, I was very embarrassed that I had said that. And two, I did not want to start a fight at the beginning of this movie. But across the theater, some other guy went, yeah!
That guy's my people, just so we're clear.
Oh, God. And then, just to make this whole thing worse, that guy ended up on my row. So I ended up uncharacteristically accepting of people on their cell phones during this movie. Because yes, I am the person who will sit forward and go, hey, put your cell phone away. I am that person. You know what I'm just discovering? I think I'm a bitch. I think I might be a bitch. Anyway, That was my viewing experience. I sat there in silence while the movie went on because I decided I had made my opinion about cell phones abundantly clear and I didn't need to say anything else. But yeah, I enjoyed the movie mostly. I had some quibbles, but mostly enjoyed it. Mac?
I enjoyed the film as well. It's easily the best in the series since Aliens. It is not as good as Alien or Aliens. I enjoyed pieces of it. I think the quibbles Donna has might be different than mine, but I don't disagree with hers. Toward the end, it just went on the wrong side of fan servicey. Like, spoiler territory, as of right now, Andy saying, "Oh, I prefer artificial person." I was like, okay, that's fine. Maybe that's just programmed into the androids as a quirk. I'm okay with that. And then we had some discussion about get away from her, you bitch. I sat there like, but the rest of the theater cheered. And so I was like, maybe I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I don't know. And then the whole thing ends with her doing a very Ripley-esque log entry as the film wraps up. Those few moments, it just went on the wrong side of fan service. But other than that, brilliant effects. Tension up the wazoo. I spent most of the movie just, it's also strangely not ashamed of any part of the series. Like, usually when you get these course correction / reboot-ish movies, they work overtime to ignore maybe some of the less successful movies in the series, but there's not only a lot of Alien and Aliens in this movie, there's a lot of Prometheus and Covenant in it, and there's little bits of Resurrection and Alien 3 in there. I don't enjoy those films, but the movie understands that it is an Alien movie, and it's not ashamed of being an Alien movie.
It did recognize
the
entirety of the Aliens universe, even that one I refuse to acknowledge exists.
Even the parts that you would forgive it for being slightly ashamed of.
Yeah.
Oh, and my theater experience was fine. I did it IMAX. That may have been the wrong choice, given this movie's lack of need to be married to an XY axis. There were moments where I was like, oh boy, I'm not going to finish that popcorn. Thanks.
I saw it twice. I did the fan event at the Dolby Thursday night and then went yesterday afternoon so I could take notes and do all that because I didn't want to try to do that on my first viewing. I loved it. I had a lot of fun with it. It understood the assignment. I do have the same issues that you do with the fan service with. I didn't have a problem with the I prefer artificial person. It was those last two that were just a little very South Park member berries. You know, just like, hey, member, you know, that was my issue. But
and in a film that like was more, if it had been more filled with that, I would have been like, oh, you know what? That's just what we're here for.
Yeah.
But the film was doing so well up until that point to kind of lose the thread toward the end felt off.
Yeah. It just, yeah, just that line. And then the video log is like, really, guys, come on. Like, you got me here. I don't need, and, you know, those of us that know, we're here. But no, someone asked me what I thought of it, and I said, you know, it's been a long time since I have felt the tension in an Alien film. And this film did that in just spades. Like I felt it, you know, after I first watched it, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I'm still kind of, even as we're talking about it, I'm still thinking about it, and I'm here for all of it. So I think that's a good segue into our big discussion. For those of you who don't know what Alien Romulus is about,
jump in just one real quick? Because I just want to add on, I loved the get away from her, you bitch moment. It rang true for me, mainly because the delivery of the line was so different.
That was good. I will grant you that, but it dusting it off never sat well with me.
Yeah.
Because I just because we seem to be in a 2-to-1, I just wanted to point out that there was one who was like,
Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoyed that. Okay, please go ahead, Kinsey.
That is okay. All right. Well, for those of you who don't know what this is about, our good buddies and Max Nemesis at IMDb wants you to know that while scavenging the deep ends of a derelict space station, a group of young space colonists come face to face with the most terrifying life form in the universe.
And some xenomorphs.
And some xenomorphs.
Yeah, because the implication is that the xenomorphs are the most terrifying. It's Ian Holm is real terror. Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, let's jump on that.
But what the film's really about, before we do, is it's just the further adventures of Kane's son. Like, that boy back! That boy back! But yes, so, let's talk about Ian Holm.
Yes, please.
So the moment of joy that hit my soul when I was like, oh, Rook! Ian Holm! Oh my gosh! Followed by the moment of horror. Oh God, they're doing this. I mean, was that supposed to be terrifying? Because it was terrifying. Jesus.
It was a part of that fan service. It felt real to the plot, real to the world. It all felt like of a piece, like I was willing to accept it. There were times where the uncanny valley kicked in, but then I realized he's a fucking robot, so damn it, movie, I'm in.
There were multiple times I had to tell myself, listen, he's a fucked up android. It's supposed to look weird.
Right.
And get myself through that way.
Right. And then, you know, there's this trend of dusting off now dead actors to return to famous roles. You know, Peter Cushing in Rogue One was a little ghoulish. Harold Ramis in Afterlife is better, but still a little weird. This one felt right. As long as Ian Holm's beneficiaries got their due on it, I'm not mad about it. I think it was a good decision in the movie.
I agree. I think that with Rook being the Ash model, one, it adds that level of tension, because when you saw him, when you saw before he, you know, boots up and everything, Billy and I both looked at each other and was like, what if that's Kane? Like, we both like had that moment, just like looking at each other like, oh shit, this is bad. I don't disagree with the uncanny valley aspect of some of the performance, but once again, he's a fucking robot, and it works. And I agree. It's definitely beneficial to the story because it's 20 years after Alien. Like they make a point like, hey, this is 20 years after. So we are still in that Ash model section.
Yeah.
And
it could be more ubiquitous because in Alien, they were actually surprised that he turned out to be an android. 20 years later, he's everywhere and nobody blinks an eye. Oh, clearly that's a robot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They weren't being so so coy with the synthetics. But yeah, because of how it was handled, that was a fan service that I did not mind.
Right.
And I liked, especially, and I'm sure because it was a little bit easier, but how he looked on the monitor toward the end when he's talking to Rain and Andy, like that was creepily just to me, like I had to remind myself, like, oh, he is dead. He was not on set. This man has passed away.
Ian Holm was not available.
Ian Holm was permanently not available.
At the same time, on that monitor, there was enough distortion between that and that to kind of blur the uncanny valley aspect of it.
I agree. Yeah, I think that helped as well with it being on the monitor. But yeah, oh man, that already put me in, seeing him there already put me in a very tense tense moment in the film, and that's saying something.
Yeah. So yes, delighted to see him, horrified to see as much of him as we did.
Right. and choosing to believe that it's not a gross misuse of a dead man's face.
I like to believe in my golden retriever heart that exists in my chest that it wasn't, that this was his estate, was like, hell yeah, let's do it.
Kinsey, as opposed to the Christopher Reeve in The Flash last year where his kids were like, oh really, he's in it, I guess.
Really?
Have you not seen The Flash yet, Donna?
Oh hell no. Okay. No help.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of shenanigans in that movie.
There's a lot of, yeah.
Christopher Reeve?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Well,
Cavill right there?
Well, it's a multiverse thing. It's supposed to be specifically Superman. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a lot with that going on.
But you want to talk about Ghoulish and Uncanny Valley. Like, this one did pretty good, whereas The Flash was like, oh, what? Oh, no, put him back. Oh. And then Nicolas Cage shows up. I'm like, that dude's still alive, and he looks worse.
I try to forget all of that, and just like the 11-year-old also in my heart just stays with the Michael Keaton of that film.
Oh, yeah, that's the only thing. I mean, I wouldn't have shown up otherwise.
Yeah.
And I was definitely showing up because.
So I try to forget all of the multiverse shenanigans with that and just go.
Yeah.
Just hang on to that right there.
But Michael Keaton's still alive and can appear in movies. If he were dead, God forbid. I would maybe Max vote again. I know.
Okay.
He's not a young man.
No.
No.
I need you guys to start preparing yourself.
Donna.
He's not a young man. I'm just saying.
He is, like, I think 70. So he's got a few more years. He just directed a movie. He's spry. He's ready to go.
Young in my heart, Donna. Okay. Young in my heart.
All right.
Okay. All right, but back to this film. Since we're on kind of an Android kick, do we want to talk about Andy?
Yeah, really cool. Like, good construction of the character that, you know, we've had the good Android trying to prove that he's good. We've had the bad Android slinking in the background. The Android who could be, depending on what chip you've got in him, be either or both or something else entirely.
Yeah, I absolutely... I love the actor's performance. I think his name is David Johnson. Johnson.
I believe that's right.
I thought he just, to me, was the standout performance of the film, of the actors.
Oh, and yeah.
I knew Kaylee Spani would be good. Mm-hmm. I've seen her in other stuff. I knew she'd be great, but
she's solid, but she's not doing anything that Sigourney Weaver didn't already master.
Right. And that's okay. I'm not mad at her for that.
That's the assignment.
Yeah. She knew the assignment. I'm fine with that. But man, he surprised me. And then it also made me realize how like emotionally invested and attached I get to artificial people, because when Cockney Josh Brolin from the Goonies started being a shit to him, I wanted to beat him up and hit him with his own little taser gun.
I wasn't sad to see him go.
No, I was fine with that. I was like, yes, please make this as gruesome and awful as possible. But yeah, no, I like the switch with Andy when you see it, and just, oh man, when they put that new chip in him, that whole scene is terrifying. Like, how I read that scene is he is realizing all of the horrors that Weyland-Yutani has done at this station, and his like facial expression as he is rebooting is expressing that, added that in with the red lights. Mm-hmm. Like, oh man, like that is chef's kiss.
That scene. Just to give you a little teaser of one of my complaints, I guess the scene after that was the first time the thought went through my head, oh, this was written by a man. Because we've got the two dudes surrounded by approximately a million facehuggers and fighting the facehuggers off, which is something we've rarely seen accomplish. I mean, Ripley was able to do it, but Ripley has more experience with them than anyone else. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, if a facehugger attacks you, you're a goner, right? So these two dudes are trapped in this chamber with approximately a million of them, fighting them off left and right, no problem. Okay, a little problem. They were struggling, but still fighting them off. Then they open the door, the chick turns around, boom. She's God. And I was like, I see how it is. All right. All right. All right. So that was the first time the thought went through my head. This was definitely written by a man. Not the last time.
No.
I was right. I mean, of course I was right. Of course it was written by a man. But
yeah,
not the last time that thought went through my head.
I guess with that, and I didn't think about it that way. I will be very honest. I am very used to bananas things that happen in Alvarez's films, usually by the third act, which we'll get into that with this. So I wasn't surprised with how things looked with that, because I am mm-hmm. very familiar, especially watching the Evil Dead remake. I'm very familiar with how things look and how things happen, but I didn't read it that way, didn't think about it that way, but I'm also not, I can see it, you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
I will at least give him this. No, never mind. Because I was remembering the end of the scene, so I was like, I was about ready to say, it looked less phallic with her, but no, never mind.
Well, okay, you know, I'm super glad you said that.
Mm-hmm.
Because something that has been on my mind since I watched it is the first Alien movie has a lot of weird sexual imagery in it.
Mm-hmm. The Giger stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Giger stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I was something I had never heard was that the egg sacs themselves in the first movie were supposed to be very vaginal. And then apparently they hit that right on the nose and someone was like, we can't do this. So they replaced them with the X that we know now. But the face huggers themselves, you know, when they're first investigating it, the underside of the face hugger,
yeah,
that has a distinct resemblance to a particular part of the anatomy. And what comes out of that is
another
a very phallic ovipositor. Well, I don't know if it's actually an ovipositor because it's depositing an entire living thing, but I'm going to call it an ovipositor because that's the closest thing it is. And it, for lack of a better term, rapes a man and mm-hmm. impregnates him.
Well, you know, that was the goal with the first one.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Cool. Sorry.
Yes, I do. That's my point. Is okay. There's some sexual politics in the first movie that was very interesting, especially for the time it was made. And this movie seems to have completely supplanted that. And that made me a little sad, I guess. I was going to say uncomfortable, but no, not uncomfortable. Sad.
I think it's ultimately the film has less to say, but more to show us. There's less message or mm-hmm. deep thinking behind it, but all of the pyrotechnics are really well formed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, for instance, when they find the xenomorph just before it hatches and the dude jams that electrical thing up in there and shocks it. Let's be honest what he's doing there.
But have we ever seen that intermediate phase? Like
we
in the
never
first
seen.
Movie, yeah, it's the face hugger. The face hugger disappears for a while. You see the skin, and then eventually it's, you know, our boy.
Yeah. No, we've never seen that phase, the cocoon phase. They speculated about it in different films, right. But we've never actually seen the hatching, if you will.
No, we have never seen it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I rewatched everything except for the Versus Predator movies recently, and I was like, I don't remember that. Is this new? Is this new?
Yeah.
I wish I had, honestly. I mean, I was minutes into it before I was like, man, I wish I had rewatched these movies.
I had recently just rewatched Aliens, and Alien pretty recently. I can't sit through three at all anymore, and four, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I liked Alien 3 better than I remembered, except for the opening minutes. Yeah.
I mean, sir, we've had this conversation before. Yeah. I'm indifferent to 3. 3 is fine. Whatever. I'm not mad it exists. I'm not happy it exists. It just exists.
It broke my heart.
Huh.
Twice. Actually, twice. 3 times. 3 times it broke my heart.
But and then the end, it did it all over again. Yeah. It's a bleak movie about the fact that we're all going to die. And I think that's what we need out of our summer entertainment.
So I'm kind of shifting gears a little bit, unless Donna, you have more things about the sexual politics you want to talk about.
No, I think I made my point.
Okay. I liked, though, and I also was very concerned because at the very beginning I knew that was Big Chap they were pulling in, like before you know they do the big reveal. I'm literally sitting in my seat mumbling to myself because I didn't have anybody on the left-hand side of me. I just had Billy on the right, and I'm sitting there going, no, 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 no. Big Chap is the only xenomorph that has actively terrified me. So the fact that they're reeling that bastard in,
Refer to him as Big Chap. I refer to him as Kane's son. Yeah.
Both are valid.
Both are valid. Yes.
Both are valid. I'm going by the production where you were. Yeah. So, but yeah, I saw Big Chap and I was like, oh no. And you know, just a little tease of seeing part of the Nostromo. There's like, I knew. And of course he wreaked havoc on that space station. Come on. Yeah. And I did appreciate Jackson Starr kept with the alien motif of everything being dirty and like used in like that's the colony. Like I liked.
Beyond that, the computer displays and the computer equipment was all like this movie could have been made in 1982.
Yeah.
Like, apparently all these spaceships are run on Commodore 64s, because those were Commodore underlying keyboards that you would occasionally see, including with the four function buttons on the right-hand side. And, that was probably my biggest disappointment with Prometheus and Covenant, is that we have these alien prequels, but all of the computer technology looks pulled out of a Marvel movie. It's clearly not a predecessor to the world of the Nostromo and the Sulaco and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. They were very clean. Even for them being on the planet in Covenant, it was still clean.
Clean but advanced, too. Yeah. Like, yeah, the three-dimensional holographic displays and all that sort of stuff.
I did like the little bird cameo with the little bird dipping. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a nice little Easter egg that, if you know, you know. That was fun.
Also, this science fiction franchise gets to keep the 20th Century Fox fanfare. Mm-hmm. Like, my biggest complaint about the Star Wars sequels was that we don't have that moment that, like, orients me in time and space. They just, like, launch into it, like, "What? Hey, Star Wars, buy me dinner first." And then this movie bought me dinner first.
This movie bought you dinner. You also got snacks at the movie.
Yep.
There was some whining and dining with this film. I will give it that. So we were briefly talking when we were talking about the scene when Andy's rebooting and all of that. I saw on the Commodore 64 display, there's 36 face huggers that get released, that get de-thawed. I have not been terrified of face huggers in a very, 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 very long time.
Are you sure it wasn't a million? Because it looked like a million.
I've done it in my brain. It felt like a million. Because then when they're all scurrying in that little ventilation shaft, I about came out of my seat.
One is too many. Yeah.
Yeah. But the actual number was 36, and I about had a conniption every time they were scurrying around. I have to give them well done making them terrifying again to especially someone like me. Because where they have to walk through the little hallway and not think about anything, not sweat, just keep your body temperature all regulated. Like, no. Andy, close the door on me. I'm dead. Just do it. I also enjoyed the zero grav stuff with the acid blood. I thought that was.
Oh, yeah.
That was just. I had never seen that or thought of that. And it was just, it's also another little tension moment that as she's navigating around it,
It was a very good scene, but it was also too much. I didn't believe it. It was my basic problem. I felt like that blood would have been much more aerosolized. And I don't think you could have safely traversed that room. It was a great scene, but I just found it not believable.
Is that Dr. Donna's? Yeah. And that's fine. That's fine. That's okay. I'm all right with that. Okay. So third act. Once again, I knew with Alvarez that third act's going to be Gonzo. I didn't know what we were going to see. And even Even with the Romulus lab of seeing them referencing Prometheus and the black goo, I did not know. I did know that the actress that played, and I'm sorry, I can't think of her name, said that there is a scene toward the end of the movie that made the crew sick. And then, like, hey,
I think that's who you're thinking of.
Yeah.
The mother.
Yeah. And I had read that her little bit, after seeing it on Thursday night. So I was like, oh, I know exactly what scene she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And that thing is going to live in my nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is pure nightmare fuel. That was something I wasn't expecting at all. I mean, I wasn't expecting any Prometheus.
I expected the film to ignore both Prometheus and Covenant, but
yeah. And so that was a pleasant surprise. Like, mm-hmm. it told you everything you needed to know about Prometheus and Covenant with the goo. And yeah, an engineer xenomorph hybrid that looked at least 8 feet tall. I don't know. It could have been a million feet tall. Where Donna saw a million face huggers, this thing was 20 feet tall in my head. It's still there. And it was still evolving, like, as the scene was going on. Like, mm-hmm. that is even more fucking terrifying to me.
You know what it made me think of in a really weird way?
What?
Is if you've ever played one of the Fallout games, if there's ever a quirk where you can see the body inside power armor, as soon as you get in power armor, the game stretches the body out in a really weird way. It looks horrifying. That's what it made me think of.
It reminded me, and this is such a niche, like, deep dive, like, when after she had the hybrid, I'm calling it the hybrid, I don't know what else to call it other than nightmare fuel. It reminded me of the very end of The Witching Hour by Anne Rice and that monstrosity that Rowan gives birth to. Like, it was that level of horrificness and monstrosity. And I didn't expect that kind of Easter egg to hit my very niche.
Mm-hmm. The credits refer to it as The Offspring.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's fine. I like Nightmare Fuel better, but mm-hmm. I'll accept what the credits say. Its Christian name is The Offspring.
So, did she just not think she was going to make it back without injecting herself? Was that why she injected herself? I'm really confused why she did that.
I think that's essentially it, but, like, with a lot of chaos and maybe not a lot of clear thinking.
Well, she was already losing blood, so she's not... She hadn't seen Andy glitching. She hadn't been part of... She didn't know what all was going on with Andy. She never treated Andy like her cousin. She never treated him. So if Andy is saying that, she is going to believe him.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, between the chaos, you know, a trusted source mm-hmm. in her mind, and the blood loss, I think she's... thinking this is what it's going to take for me and my baby to survive. Barney.
Good point. She trusted Andy.
Yeah. And she had no reason not to, from what she had seen, you know. Now, granted, I wish she may have listened to Rain, you know, when Rain's saying wait. But yeah, she's looking at survival in a highly stressful, highly chaotic nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to take 30 minutes, according to her brother.
Yeah. That whole bit with her, and that was, again, this was clearly written by a man. That was just, I don't know, man. Maybe a woman would have written something similar to show, but science almost ignores women's bodies. You know, science almost doesn't care about women's bodies. So I'm not sure that, I just don't know. I don't feel like that would have happened.
It was written by a man and a man who had issues with his mother.
Yeah, I'll give that.
That tracks.
Yeah.
So again, compared to the sexual politics of Alien, and then you look at just the complete degradation of this pregnant woman. I'm just, man, I'm not loving this. I'm not loving this. This is, it's hard to make me not love an alien movie. It can be done.
I was like, have you met Alien 3 and Resurrection?
I have met Alien 3. I didn't quite catch that other thing you said, but...
And Resurrection. Oh, yes, okay.
I'm sorry. There's some kind of it's, glitch.
Winona Ryder!
Winona Ryder, she'd be great in an alien movie.
Written by Joss Whedon. Whedon.
No, I lost you again. Anyway, they really kind of lost me on that. Now, once we had the horror walking around, that was some pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that Rain got to wear shorts. She was running around in her pajamas, but she got to wear shorts instead of skimpy little panties. So that was, you know, we're moving up in the world.
Took 45 years yeah. to get us some pants.
To get us pants in space for pajamas.
Yeah.
So progress. Yay. I'm not going to lie. I did like Rain's Weyland Yutani like sweatshirt without the sleeves. Like I did dig that one with like the faded logo. I kind of dug it, but
I kind of liked the touch with the chest burster of it because it was basically a premature. It was basically a premature chest hugger because mm-hmm. they got chest burster because they got the face hugger off her early. So it wasn't really ready to come out.
No.
And so instead of just bursting out of her and running off, it opened up her chest and just sat there and rested for a few minutes. And I thought that was kind of a nice touch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely something we hadn't seen before. That, to me, stuff like that, that's what makes the two fan service things that we mentioned earlier so annoying, is that there's a lot of things we hadn't seen before done.
Right.
And done very well. And then you just have those two moments. Because you could have still had the line. Hell, you could have had the line and had Rain say it in context to one of them by Andy, like a xenomorph by Andy. Yes, I'm totally, by the way, I'm copying Editor Billy's suggestion on that one, because I thought it was pretty awesome that, you know, if there's having a xenomorph by Andy, and she could have been like, get away from him, you son of a bitch. You know, still have it, still do the nod.
I think I still would have had a problem with it if it had been that construction. But
yeah, but it would be less in your face, you know? So it's, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda, whatever, you know. Yeah.
Marginally less.
Yeah. But it's still a solid film. It's still a solid.
Not only solid, probably my favorite movie I've seen this year in the theater. If I'm evaluating things, like I had all the stuff that really works so well that I'm able to compartmentalize the stuff I don't like about it.
Yeah. It's definitely probably my favorite film I've seen of the summer. It will be interesting to see where this falls, which, spoiler alert, it'll probably fall pretty high, you know, come year end.
Yeah.
On movies, but definitely probably the best film I've seen of summer.
Yeah.
And it also definitely frustrates me that, you know, this film is going to make $100 million easily.
Yeah.
When it was supposed to go directly to Hulu. Like, that was the original plan, not do a wide release. And we could have had... Yeah.
Like with Prey.
Yeah. Well, that was plan. That's where my point was that I was going with.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have done that with Prey. Like, mm-hmm. Prey would have had the same reception.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was just...
Prey was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Prey is better than this. Like, Prey is... all new of the stuff, whereas this is like 80% new stuff. Yeah. Not, maybe even I didn't go as high as 90, but
I'll go through that. I'll accept that number.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have anything else on Alien Romulus? And we're ready to jump into Rule Poland quotes.
Given that we had a strike last year, there were entirely too many trailers in front of this movie, and all of the movies were of low interest to me. Like the new Captain America. Oh, it's going out in February. That's when they release the really good movies. So there's no way to be not excited about that. Gladiator 2, The Crow remake.
The Crow remake looks awful. And I'm not... And
really
as a,
bad. Really
as a,
bad.
And as a Gen Xer that of that age where The Crow was a thing, I don't give a shit about The Crow. I didn't, no offense, I like the soundtrack of the original, but
and
I didn't.
The original's a perfectly fine little movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Kraven the Hunter?
Ugh.
Come on.
You got a whole different list of previews than I did.
And it felt like it lasted half a goddamn hour. I was like, and none of them were like, ooh, let's go see that. It was all like, oh, okay. Fine.
Like, it's fine. It's fine.
I got Beetlejuice and...
I did not get a Beetlejuice
trailer. We did not get a Beetlejuice trailer. Had a movie that called 1992 that I don't know how many more Ray Liotta films are going to come out since the man has been dead for 2 years. Don't get me wrong. I'm fine with more Ray Liotta content, but...
Truly the Tupac of character actors.
You know.
I mean, he was a very good actor.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And like these past couple of years, he was doing stuff to remind you, oh, this is why he was fantastic. He just made some bad movies. Okay, well, so for our quote, which we all had quotes that we really liked and, you know, had discussions off mic about, you know, we've talked about the bitch line, but the one we landed on was, thank you, and remember the company is grateful for your enduring service. Which, you know, yeah.
One of the characters referred to the company as Wayu, which I've never heard before. Maybe they've used that before and I just hadn't noticed it, but I really loved that. Wayu.
I hadn't heard that either until this movie, so I thought that was interesting. That was different. I was fine with that. All right. Rule-wise, we kind of decided, we landed on a two-part rule because both Mac and Donna's rules, I feel, could have helped.
I think Mac's is more appropriate for the real world and the world of this movie, where mine really is appropriate for the alien world.
Okay. Then you go first, Donna.
Okay. In the world in which the alien franchise exists, never trust Weyland-Yutani. Never. They will re-up your contract and make your quota hours go up. They will tell you they're not going to try to bring the alien back, and they will try to bring the alien back. They will make Paul Reiser lie to you. I mean...
I think Paul Reiser was ready to lie to us either way. I'm gonna flag on that play.
You think Paul Reiser was lying on his own? Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
His own volition.
I co-signed with Mac on.
He just went to work for the company that would utilize his ability to lie most effectively.
I co-sign with
Weyland-Yutani cannot be trusted ever.
And my rule is sort of a two-part rule, and we had some debate about whether the utility of the first part is good, but it's the first part works for this universe. Don't get pregnant, but if you do, don't take any drugs.
Yeah.
I want to jump in real quick here and say I do not sign off on the first part of that rule.
I understand. Donna thinks that the human race should continue to propagate, whereas I'm, you know, we've had a run. It's
also, it's your body. Get pregnant if you want to get pregnant.
True. It's not a... You must not get pregnant. It's, I urge you not to get pregnant.
All right. And Mac has our poll question.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an exposition dump there at the middle with the Rook bot. And the implication is that the company knows a lot more about the Nostromo incident than maybe we had previously assumed. So the question becomes, if the company has been looking for Ripley and the Narcissus this whole time, why do they not believe her when they finally find her in about another 20 years?
So, this is kind of also going to Donna's thing about Weyland-Yutani. I think they're gaslighting her because they need her. And I think they've read her psyche vows because she's been having them for 6 months. And they know enough about her personality that it is... To get what they want, they're going to have to, oh no, be shady. And... You know, gaslighter.
What?
Right? And I think that it's a tactic to get what they want and use her because she's been psychologically profiled. So they know, I hate to say it, probably they know at that moment her better than she knows herself. because she's still trying to get her footing back. And so they, you know, they want to get what they want. And then you have Burke, who investigates the coordinates that she gives. Mm-hmm. And suddenly these miners don't come back.
And that's where it unravels for me, because they have all of this data on what happened to the Nostromo. So they clearly know what planet they found that Cain got face hugged.
Yeah.
Why would they set up a colony there? I get fucking with Ripley. Like, that's their whole thing.
Yeah.
The second part, though, is, oh, we're also going to put a lot of equipment and human capital in this planet, knowing that it's not going to work out.
I don't think they knew exactly where the beacon was.
Mm.
I think that it was set up like, oh, that they would eventually come across it. Ripley was always the key. Ripley, since she survived, she was the key to know exactly the coordinates of it. Where
I think before seeing this movie, I would agree with you. But after that exposition dump, they know a lot more about the Nostromo than I thought they did. Yeah. And I can't believe that that didn't include an idea of where the planet was.
No, I think they know the planet. I just don't think they knew where on the planet. That's why.
Okay. Maybe.
I think they knew the planet because they had those when I say coordinates, I meant where the derelict ship is at. That's what I mean by coordinates on the planet. I think, gotcha. You know, they knew the planet, but they just didn't know where exactly on the planet. So,
yeah.
And, it's a big planet. So.
So I think they're gaslighting Ripley is the correct answer. But I just thought I'd throw out another option just so it's out mm-hmm. there, which is that different branches of the company are not communicating very well with each other. Mm-hmm. As far as the why are they establishing a colony on this planet, one option is different branches of the company are not communicating well with each other. The more likely option, to my mind, is it has been made very clear that they don't care much about anything more than they care about acquiring a sample of this creature and working on it. So
yes.
Getting a colony set on that planet then gives them a foothold to get there and find this creature and get some samples of it. That is a distinct possibility.
Distinct possibility. And then the only thing I would go further on that is that they're so hung up on the idea of the cost of the colony itself in aliens. Why invest that level of money? Why not send a smaller group of people out there, not a full-born shake-and-bake colony?
Who do they complain about the cost of the colony to?
I'm saying in Aliens, Carter Burke doesn't want to nuke the whole thing because it's an expensive piece of equipment. We can't authorize that.
Right.
Why
and it
spend-
can still...
Yeah.
It can still be. They can still put people there because they're talking about equipment.
Right. They spent that much money on a shake and bake colony when they could have just sent some people out there, like say, oh, the planet's fine. It's a great planet. You love it. Huge. Tremendous. Trust me.
It's a way to study the xenomorphs in the wild. By having the shake and bake colony there, they can study the xenomorphs without... So, you know, basically scientific interference. Burke, I feel, is like the middleman between the finance and the science department. So that is why he is, you know, we can't do that. But I think setting up the colony, I think it's more, oh no, shocking again, nefarious that they can study from afar what a xenomorph will do, how that will look planet-wise, just more setting of their bioweapon division.
These are all reasonable explanations. They all lead to new questions for me.
Okay.
But then it's the company. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. What was your thoughts, Mac, on...
Honestly, that the company forgot about it. Like, institutional memory was not so great. They stopped looking for her pretty quickly after Romulus takes over. And by the time they do find her, anybody that was working on this project had retired. There's a file somewhere.
Yeah.
But nobody's cross-checking that sort of thing. It's not even that the company is that nefarious. It is that it is so large and so bureaucratic that it forgets what it's doing.
I can see that too.
That's
possible. Yeah. I mean, that's what I like with this speculation, especially when we have a good poll question like this.
Yeah.
All of these things that we have discussed feel valid and true in the universe. Like, I don't feel like no, that's wrong. Or yes, this is what, like, I think they're all interesting, and they're all definitely possibilities. All right, I'll go first on Happy Place because I see both of y'all thinking and pondering. So my Happy Place is the new season of the Tulsa PAC started first of this month, and they opened with Moulin Rouge, which was fantastic. This entire season is very exciting, and if you have the means to be a patron or to catch a show, this season looks to be pretty phenomenal. We're getting the Back to the Future musical, which was very recently on Broadway. I'm interested to see what happens with that. It's got
I have some skepticism, but please, yes.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we're going to go see it. So, Mac, I'll let you know.
You'll let me know. Yeah.
I'll let you know. You know, they're doing Clue, which I didn't know that was, you know, something that could be done on a play, but sure. And then some staples like Les Mis and Wicked are coming this year. So it's a solid, solid season. And yeah, I'm just very excited about it.
Clue? You think it's based on the Tim Curry movie?
Yeah.
And yeah, it from the poster I saw at the PAC.
That's actually been a play for a while, because like some community theater
yeah
people I know have done that as well.
Neat. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. And they also have Mrs. Doubtfire this season, which I have no idea how that's going to work, if that is a play or a musical or both. Well, yeah. I mean, it would be both, but a play or a musical. So that will be also interesting to see. But anyway, I'm always a big fan of supporting the arts, however you can. And the PAC, I feel they're doing pretty good stuff this season.
I can tell you a particular joy I have discovered, which is that I actually started brushing my cat, which is a thing you should do, but I haven't done previous to now. So I got my kitty a brush, and she loves to jump up here in front of me and get brushed. And then sometimes she'll chew on the brush. And if I try to stop brushing her too soon, she'll reach out and grab my hand and pull it back. And it's adorable. And it makes me really happy. So just there we go. Brushing my cat.
We have that brush. That's become
my happy.
It's been kind of a honey crusted nut bar disaster of a week, I'll be honest. So Apple TV put the complete series of Pee-wee's Playhouse on sale. So I bought that, and I'm watching one a day because it only works one a day, because you can't have multiple secret words in a day. And that's probably been it.
I'll sign off on that Happy Place. That's a good one. Heck, I'll sign off on both of them with the brushing of the pets. So you can find us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We're Beyond the Cabin in the Woods. Our website and Blue Sky username is beyondthecabinthewoods.com. I am on Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram as at Callista77.
You can find me on Blue Sky and Instagram at Dragon Goblin. There's no I in Goblin. It's at dragongoblin.com on Blue Sky.
Whatever social media network is relevant to you, I might be there as at Party Apocalypse. PartyApocalypse.com has this podcast and other fine podcasts, including The Holodeck is Broken with my co-hosts Eris and Laura. And there's full runs of As the Myth Turns, The Fourth Wall, Friendable's Two Friends Talking About Hannibal Lecter, and Disorganized, a Criminal Minds podcast, books, blogs, movie reviews, and nothing else.
Also, thank you to our editor, Billy. We appreciate everything that you do for us and making us sound very professional. We do appreciate all your help.
Thank you, Billy. Do we sound professional?
He makes us sound professional. I'm saying he's got his behind the scenes magic that he does. And we are very appreciative of that. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us if you aren't doing so already.
And don't read the Latin.
You know what horror is?